You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and we want to thank you for making this part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday, and this is the Monday show, and we're going to help you kick off this week right. We're the Raining Jays. I'm John Corrales. I cover this team called the Boston Celtics for MassLive.com. Joined by the kid, Jay King. He does the same thing, but for The Athletic. We're here to talk to you a little bit more about the draft. Since Jay wasn't on the Friday show because we were recording that at like 3 in the morning. We'll talk a little bit about free agency and the Vucevic rumors, the Celtics' interest in that. And the Celtics' big breaking news, assistant coach hire. We'll get into some big Joe Mazzulla talk.
Vooch.
In the third segment. All right. So let's, first of all, I implore all of you who are new listeners to please subscribe to the podcast everywhere podcasts exist. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Himalaya. Please do that. Subscribe. Also give us a good written review and a 5-star rating. That would really help us out. Okay, Jay, draft. Boston Celtics made 4 selections, 2 first-round picks, 2 second-round picks. We're going to talk to them if people are listening to this on Monday. Later on today, the big introduction is on Monday at the Celtics practice facility. Romeo Langford, Grant Williams, Carson Edwards, Tremont Waters. So, Jay, what's your reaction to the draft? How do you think the Celtics did?
I think Romeo Langford is a high upside guy who can finish and draw free throws and could do that even as a freshman in college, which seems pretty important. Grant Williams seems like just a mature human being on top of being a high IQ basketball player, sturdy grown man in the post, and possible, like, I don't want to say Horford because that's very disrespectful, but he's a big man you can run offense through at the elbows, and he's a good passer, all that stuff. He seems to be a nice fit. I think he'll be end up a role player, but a pretty good one. And then Carson Edwards, who can obviously shoot the crap out of the ball. So I like the Celtics draft. Edwards and Williams were two guys I was high on just because they were both very good in college and do some things that should help them stand out at the NBA level. The one thing that I think has been kind of overlooked, salary dumping Aaron Baines.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see what they do with the cap space now, because now I'm really intrigued. You're dump a guy unless you have a reason for it.
Well, sure. Except I'll throw an alternate scenario that Aaron Baines knew that this was coming and wanted it to happen. And it wasn't just a salary dump that took Aaron Baines by surprise, that Aaron Baines was part of that decision and may have just wanted his money and said, hey, I'll opt in if you trade me and, you know, we'll figure something out and I can go somewhere else. So I understand that there's they salary dumped him. There's got to be a reason why they're creating this cap space. But I think Aaron Baines wanted to come back to compete for a championship and play for a winning team that included Kyrie.
But he's in Phoenix.
He's getting bought out. So he's going to get that $5 million. He's going to get bought out. Somehow he's going to make that money. So he probably makes more money opting in and getting traded and bought out than he does just not opting in. You know what I mean? So I think the Celtics just kind of saw this coming and worked with Baines. I feel like it's more that than the other way around. I could be wrong. I mean, you could be right. It could be.
We will see. But they now have substantial cap space. Could be up to $34 million.
Yep.
They could. Without really doing anything too crazy if they don't bring back Rozier. So I'm intrigued by the amount of cap space now, and especially after the Baines move. Like, they've got the money to go make a move. Do I think they'll be able to entice any of the top free agents? No. They couldn't even keep their own. But I do think, like, you can do some things with that, whether it's taking on bad contracts or going out getting a guy you like, guys you like.
Sure.
But they have enough money to be players now.
Why don't we save this stuff for the second segment and go back to the draft here.
Cool.
Because in the second segment, we'll talk about guys that they could get, some of the rumors there, and how they might spend this money. Back to the draft aspect of it, I'm curious to see, like, my initial reaction was that this was the Danny Ainge trifecta, that they got a guard that or a wing that can't shoot, they got an undersized big, and they got a small guard. Like, that's like the Danny Ainge trifecta to me. And those guys all might come out and be good players. I'm not casting aspersions on this draft. I hate judging drafts in the immediate aftermath because we have no clue what these kids are going to turn into. You got to give them time to develop. So I'm not sitting there saying that these guys can't get past some of these deficiencies. Like Langford, he had that thumb injury and he's coming off the surgery. The surgery was recent enough where we're not even 100% sure that he's going to play in summer league. Maybe we'll find out during the introductions whether that's going to happen or not. But it's recent enough where we might have to wait to see how he shoots. But I'm just kind of curious how these guys are going to fit in the short term. One thing, though, that seems to stand out to me with these guys, a common thread is that they're all, like, good guys. And I feel like that's a reaction to this past season, that after having problems in the locker room, that Ainge and Brad Stevens were like, look, we can't have these malcontents in here anymore. We need some, like, high character guys that are going to come in here and kind of do what we tell them to do as a coaching staff. Like, one of the problems last season was, we heard the players say it too, Jay. Oh, coach laid out the plan. We just kind of got away from it. How many times have we heard that? I feel like this draft might be a reaction to that.
Yeah, but I mean, when you're at 14 and what ended up being 22 and 34 or 33, whatever it was, like, yeah, it's either you take a swing on a guy who has really high upside, or you go with a pretty solid, likely role player. And obviously the Celtics went with the role players. I don't know how much of it was just the whiplash of this past season or the fact that they like those guys.
Well, let me ask you this.
I do think. Okay.
Because Kevin Porter Jr. went all the way down to 30, and the knock on him was his personal issues. Couldn't they use a guy with the Kevin Porter Jr. skill set?
Well, he also didn't have a good freshman year either. Like, so he's a guy who seems like he might be a knucklehead, and he had a bad freshman year, versus the Celtics went with the freshman who was, and this is another threat I see. Celtics don't get scared off if, like, a freshman comes in and doesn't live up to the billing right away. We saw it with Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown had what most considered a rough freshman season. Celtics weren't scared off. They'd scouted him for years and years. They knew what the type of skills level and athleticism level that he had. Took him at 3. Jason Tatum, I think, probably lowered his stock during his freshman year at Duke. Celtics didn't care, picked him at 3. And now Romeo Langford, he's another guy who's a top 5 recruit and dealt with some shooting issues, whether it was because of the thumb or whatever. And Celtics got him at 14. And they haven't been scared off by, like, one bad year. And I think that's pretty smart because college seasons are so small, such a small sample size that when you've been scouting guys for 5 years, sometimes the track record and just who guys are, what type of skills, attributes they have, a lot of the stuff you can get a nice gauge for it over the long term. And so that's one thing I've noticed. I do think you might be underselling Edwards and Williams a bit. Like, those are two of the most productive players in college. And I think Williams, especially if he can guard fives, if he can play center, and he might be because he's that strong and that smart, then he's going to be a really skilled dude at that spot. And Carson Edwards can just fill it up. And he has some issues. He's not the tallest guy, not 6 foot, six wingspan, but he's one of the best shooters and most versatile shooters in the draft. If to even shoot 11 threes per game is like, you have to be really skilled just to attempt 11. And he didn't have the best percentages, but 36% on the diet that he took is really, really tough. And he takes them coming around screens. He takes them creating for himself off the dribble. He takes just spot up when he's open, and he can shoot all the different ways. And so that seems like a skill that will come in handy. And especially if the Celtics are going to play bigger lineups with Gordon Hayward or Marcus Smart at point guard, like, I feel like Carson Edwards could be a nice fit if they do go in that direction.
It seems like the Carson Edwards selection, that could be a shrewd one. The Celtics pulled off what might be kind of like a weird steal in this draft with Edwards. And it's just something for us to tuck in the back of our heads, because the Celtics knew the Sixers were targeting Matisse Thybulle. And from what I understand now, this is just apparently the Sixers telegraphed their promise to Thybulle, and the Celtics caught wind of it and at 20 said, well, we're going to take him. So if you're not, if you don't want to make this trade, then we're just going to take this guy that you made the promise to. So they got, in exchange for 20, they got 24 and 33. And at 24 is going to be the pick that goes to Phoenix with Aaron Baines. 33 is the Carson Edwards pick that they got from the Sixers. That's just something to keep in the back of our minds, that if Edwards turns out to be a good NBA player, that's something that the Celtics didn't even have. I'm just making that statement so everybody understands that if that works out, that the Celtics kind of called out the Sixers on what they were, their promise to Thybulle, and got this pick out of that. So that's it.
What will you do if Ty Jerome becomes a solid NBA player, though, and the Celtics traded him away?
Well, I mean, I guess that happens, but I mean, the Celtics traded him away for
a
reason.
Keep that one tucked away too, baby.
Sure. I mean, anytime that happens, you want to keep it tucked away. I think my point with the Celtics one, though, is that this was a pick. First of all, it wasn't their own pick, but the Edwards one was a pick that they didn't have, that they kind of took advantage of the Sixers being stupid, which is just a little bit different, I'd say. All right, we'll leave it at that.
It seems like they probably sniffed that one out.
Yeah. We'll take a break. We're going to come back. The Celtics have cap space to spend. Depending on how they play it, they could have up to $34 million. We'll talk about how they might spend that after the break here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Celtics cap picture seems to be getting a little clearer after making these picks. They have right now probably $34 million, up to $34 million. It could be less. It depends on what they want to do with Terry Rozier. So With Terry Rozier's cap hold, they've got $25 million. If they renounce Terry Rozier, then they have $34 million. So let's start with this, Jay. We keep hearing, like Shams said, the Celtics have two priorities, pursuing Orlando's Nick Vucevic and Terry Rozier. So do you think Terry Rozier is actually a priority for the Boston Celtics? You think they could bring him back and basically cost themselves $9 million worth of cap space?
I think they could certainly bring him back. I think it depends on what price tag he gets. If you look at the roster right now, they don't really have a point guard. Like, you could say Marcus Smart, I guess. You could say Carson Edwards, I guess. I don't think Carson Edwards is a point guard. Marcus Smart is probably more of a point guard than Carson Edwards. But they're going to need some ball handling help. And Terry Rozier, I don't think there'll be a huge market for him. There aren't a lot of teams that need point guards. He's obviously coming off a disappointing season. So it wouldn't surprise me to see the Celtics get him on what turns out to be a pretty valuable deal. If last year was indeed just like a letdown in a situation that was really bad for him. The Vucevic thing sounds weird to me. I know he was great this past year. Using a huge chunk of money on a guy who I'm not sure is like a championship caliber player who can hold up in deep in the playoffs, I think would be misguided. So the Vucevic thing is weird to me. I may just be underrating him because I didn't watch enough of the Magic this past year. I know his stats were really good. I know he's improved a lot, but that one sounds weird to me.
Yeah, I wasn't 100% on board with it. I guess it depends. It really depends on what his contract is going to be. I don't know. I'm struggling to figure out what a real offer for Vucevic would be that is like his market value and what would be palatable. Like, could the Celtics put together a 4-year, is 4 years $80 million too much? And that would start when you factor in the raises, that would start somewhere in year one at 18.7, and then gradually give raises. So like the last year would probably be like 23 million or somewhere in that range. Do you think that's a fair offer for him? And is that too much for the Celtics?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge Vucevic guy.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
it would be weird. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, he does fill a need theoretically, like throwing money out the window for a second. He's becoming a stretch five. He's going to be 29 years old. So he's kind of in the middle of his prime. He was a better rebounder last year than by far than any of the Celtics were. He shot like 36% okay. from three. So he does do things that are useful that the Celtics could use.
But if you're going to pay up big for a center, wouldn't you just pay Al Horford what he wants?
I'm sure.
Like if money is the thing driving away Al Horford, makes no sense to me to then pay a huge contract to Vucevic.
Well, look, if Al Horford's going off to get four years, $112 million, then I'm not giving Vooch 4 years, $112 million. Like if the rumored number for Al Horford is even $100 million, then that's too much. That's too much for Horford. That's too much for almost any center, really. The only center that's kind of worth that right now is Jokic. I wouldn't give $100 million. Like $80 million is the high end of where I'd go for a center. And even that, I'm not 100% sold on. Like I'd rather get Dwayne Dedman out of Atlanta and see if you can get him for like $10 million. I feel like that's a much more, I mean, he's a guy that's hitting threes. He can defend. He can rebound. Like, that's a guy that's probably more useful at much less money.
More useful than Vucevic?
At the money, I mean, for value. I mean, if you're talking about a guy that can hit threes, a five who can hit threes and rebound, then would you rather spend 4 years, $80 million on Vooch, or would you rather spend, 4 years, $40 million on Dwayne Dedman?
Yeah, I don't know. I would be pretty surprised if Vucevic ends up in Boston. And that's not my reporting. It just, I don't feel like it's the basketball fit that makes sense. At the number that he'll be getting paid, I just think, like, as good as he was this past year, I just think you're better off, like, just letting the Jays rock, letting Hayward do his thing, and trying to get, like, a short-term decent center. Celtics do need some big men, though.
They are
badly in need of big men. If you look at the roster right now, the depth chart, it's like, is Robert Williams the starting center right now?
Right now, yeah.
Is Grant Williams? Like,
yeah, one of the Williamses is going to start at center right now.
So they definitely need to go out and solidify that area somehow. But I don't know if paying big money to a center and a more immobile center is smart in 2019.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, it's not the best use of money. I guess it depends on how much. It really depends on how much you're paying Vucevic. Like, I think four years, $80 million is like the high end. If it's somewhere in that range or less, I think I'd be okay with it, because starting him at 18, like 18.6, I think the number was, to get to that number, 18.6, if they have $34 million in cap space, what's that, $26 million left that you can go out, less than $26 million that you can go out and spread out. You can make an offer to a Malcolm Brogdon, and you can go make an offer to somebody else. You can get three quality guys in that range if you're starting Vooch at
34 minus 18 is 16, John.
16. Okay, so you get two high quality guys. Oh God, math on the fly. So sorry. God, so bad.
I like when you try to do math on the podcast. It always entertains me.
Oh my God, it's so bad. It's so bad. If I don't have it all spelled out in front of me, it's just brutal. Anyway, so $16 million. You could still go get Brogdon, I think, for $16 million.
No, they won't let Brogdon go for 16.
You don't think? I don't know.
No chance.
So what would it take to get Brogdon?
No chance. I mean, you have to overpay him because he's a restricted free agent. And I don't know what the overpay would be there. Like, he just averaged 16-4-4 or whatever it was on 50-40-90. He had a really, really good season. He's a really important part of a team that now is probably at this time before Kawhi decides what he's going to do, the Eastern Conference favorite for next year. So I think it would be tough to drag him away. Maybe you just screw with the Bucks and say, ha, 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 you got to match this contract now. But I think it would take a lot to pull him away, honestly.
I hate trying to figure out the value of guys, because I think there's value to Vucevic, potentially.
He's a good player. He's definitely a good player.
You want to let the Tatum and Brown and Hayward, for as long as we have Hayward, attack. And to have a guy like Vooch who can spread the floor, and if he's a threat from three, that gives them more space. I mean, yeah, you want to give the money to a guy like, I'd rather have Al Horford, but if Al Horford would have stuck around for 4 years, $80 million, that's great, but he's not going to. He's clearly going to go get a ton more money from somebody. if Al Horford's going to get that kind of money, then Vucevic could look around and be like, well, I got to get somewhere closer to that. So maybe four for 80 is on the low end. Maybe he gets more than that. And if he gets more than that, I think that's way too much, because you can get a good serviceable center. Like I said, a Dwayne Dedman out of Atlanta can hit threes, spread the floor. He's not going to be a crazy creator. He's not going to draw a ton of double teams or anything like that. But if you want to spread the floor and make sure that the offense runs through your wings, the Jays, then maybe a guy like Dedman is a better way to spend the money. And then maybe you do throw a stupid offer at Brogdon and see if they match it, and you screwing with the Bucks. I don't know. Restricted free agency is a mess. Maybe it just is as simple as you bring Rozier back. Let me throw this Rozier scenario at you. I wrote about this. I think this could be the one win-win scenario. You sign Rozier to a two-year contract that's somewhere in the $35 million range. So you start him at 16 or 17, plus the raise. That second year is a player option. He comes back. He has a chance to play at a reasonable number. He tries to up his value back up to the $20 million that he might have gotten once upon a time. And you have him at a tradable contract as well. I think maybe short-term money for Terry Rozier, you bring him back that way, could be a thing. Do you think that's realistic?
I mean, it all depends on the market for him. The drawback to that is if he plays well, that contract, you probably want to keep him or might want to keep him. If he doesn't play well, what was the number you had? 13?
I had 35, like something like that. So it'd be, you start him.
So 17 and a half, 18 the second year?
Yeah, like I think, so let me come up with a number. Like a two-year deal worth, you start him at like 15 or 16. Let's say 16. You could do
that. Why that much?
Well, my thought is, if you bring him back at that number, 2 years, $16 million, 2 years, $30 million, you're at something like his market value, like somewhere around his market value. My thought is, you bring him back to a place where he's familiar, that he gets to be like a starter, or gets to get like 30, 35 minutes. He gets to rebuild his value. You get him at a number that's tradable. You know, maybe you pump it up to a number where he feels comfortable coming back. I think at 2 years, you're not really screwing yourself over. You might be, I don't know. And theoretically, if he plays well, he'll just opt out and become an unrestricted free agent. And then, you know, next year you figure something else out. But really what I'm looking at is a guy that will play himself into a higher value, and then you could maybe trade him and get an asset for him. That's probably the more realistic thing that would happen in this scenario. But it's a short-term fix that I would expect him to come off the books next year somehow.
Yeah, we'll see. It's interesting because when you look at the Celtics roster, they just have so many holes right now. And I know the other day, I think it was Wick, was calling it a retooling period. Not exactly a rebuilding, but a retooling. But right now, this is a team that, like we said, doesn't really have a point guard. Shimmy Ojeleye is probably the only stretch four. Like, Gordon Hayward can play a little four. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have pretty rarely. I don't know if you can get away with them at four very often, just because they're not as big as most fours. And they don't really have, they don't have at all any established centers. So it's like, this roster right now needs a lot of work and a lot of different types of pieces. And there are, I mean, it's just right now a weird group of players that I don't know, like, would Marcus Smart be the starting point guard if the season started tomorrow? Maybe.
Yeah.
And just go with, like, a bunch of interchangeable wings next to him and try to defend like hell and, yeah. So, and then start somebody weird at center and just get wild with it. I don't know. But obviously, free agency will change some things and they'll pick up some guys who are probably pretty useful. But right now, there are just a lot of holes on this roster. And I don't know how, I'm not sure how the Celtics are going to proceed once free agency hits. And I don't know what types of players they'll target. They have obvious holes. I don't know whether Rozier will be back. But I'm kind of just guessing in regards to what they might do with that money.
We're all guessing at this point, Jay. No one's got any solid information. It's going to be a weird time. The next few weeks are going to be super, super interesting. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. The Celtics have filled their vacant assistant coach role. Oh, man, I know this is the hot Celtics assistant coach talk that you've been waiting for. Finally, it's coming after the break. Stick around. We'll be right back. Micah Shrewsbury left the Boston Celtics bench to go back to college, which means they had a hole, and it's been filled, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. The Boston Celtics are hiring Fairmont State coach Joe Mazzulla as their assistant coach. Woj says that Mazzulla made a strong impression with the Celtics G League staff before returning to college 2 years ago, and he played at West Virginia for John Beilein, who is now the Cavs coach, which is weird to say. Jay, you remember Joe Mazzulla.
Mazzulla was my boy in college.
Okay, of course. You have weird attachments to college.
He was just a little tough bastard. Little tough bastard who could just kind of do a little bit of everything and really impacted the game, even though he wasn't at all the most athletic guard in the court. Always super solid. Kind of played like he was going to be a pretty good coach at some point in the future.
You think? Really?
And now it seems like he is.
Now he is.
Yeah.
I have no knowledge of what he brings as an assistant coach. The only thing I can say about this move is I was really hoping for a former player. I thought that a former player would have helped. But that was also back when I thought that they were going to bring back Kyrie and Anthony Davis. Like, I thought a former player was going to be great in that scenario. But now with this team, this makeup, maybe it's not as necessary. But I do like the idea of former players on the coaching staff because they do have a different connection with players. And I think it would be good for Stevens to have somebody like that on his staff.
Maybe a 14 or 15-year veteran?
Yeah. Somebody like that.
See what I did there?
I did. I see that. I see it. They did have Walter McCarty. He's the type of guy that I'm talking about. Like, I feel like that kind of guy. But who knows? Maybe Kendrick Perkins someday.
Yeah, like someone who's just been through it all. Perkins would fit that type well. Yeah.
I just like that idea because, you know, having
just
a guy,
just somebody who's been through it and can just give you that wisdom,
can understand, a guy who understands, you know. And it's different when it's a teammate, when it's a coach. When it's a coach, it's just a different feeling, and it's, you know, you can. I feel like from a head coach's perspective, like from a guy like Stevens, whose playing days ended way, way long ago at a very low level. Like, he doesn't have that connection. He's never been through contract negotiations. He's never gone through trade rumors. He's never been traded. So a guy like Perk can talk about, like, hey, when the trade deadline comes around, imagine this past trade deadline. Imagine having Perk on the bench to go into that locker room and kind of send some, you know, straighten some guys out with, with how they were reacting maybe to some of those rumors. Like, he's been through it, like you said. But I'm sure that Joe Mazzulla will be a fine coach. All right. That's
Joe. I'm telling you, man, he played like he was going to be a fine coach one day.
Well, you know, we'll see.
And that's clearly how all good coaches are made.
That's it. You go out there and you, when I feel like when somebody says like, oh, he plays like he'll be a good coach, that he's not a very good basketball player. Like, I'm sure he was good. West Virginia. Or
he just made the most out of his talent. Like, there are some really, like, Jason Kidd was a Hall of Famer who you thought was going to be a good coach, really good coach. Yeah. Didn't necessarily turn out that way, but you would have thought like that man is going to be an incredible coach because he just sees the game at a different level. So it doesn't have to be bum juice guys, but just guys that maximize their talent and see the game really well.
I feel like the player who, while he's playing, you think, wow, he'd be a good coach, is the guy that may not be, maybe he's not the best player on the floor, but you can see him directing. Like, you can see him in control of the game. And it's usually a point guard, because you don't see a lot of forwards or centers, because they just don't have the ball in their hands. But you can see point guards. Maybe that's why so many future coaches are former point guards, and not a lot of bigs, because you have that sight of them controlling a game and seeing the game and saying, oh, okay, this guy's got it. He's like a coach on the floor, as they say. So, almost like a Rondo if he wasn't, you know, so moody.
He seems no longer moody. Everyone loves him these days.
Yeah, he seems maybe he's mellowed out over the years. Now that
he's all grown up and he's all grown up and he's all grown up.
That's a reference to something that I don't know.
I can't believe I didn't go to the casino today.
I can't believe you didn't go to the casino today either. But from what I understand, the Encore Boston Harbor had basically like nothing but $50 tables, like a couple of $25 tables around. $50 tables is just a little out of my league. I'm not sitting down playing $50.
You just gotta become a big baller, John.
Yeah. Well, if somebody wants to pay me big baller money, maybe my bosses at Mass Live are listening. Sure.
Use that podcast guap.
Oh yeah, that's well. Then more people need to subscribe to the podcast because then I need some big baller money. So there it is. So get your friends to subscribe to this podcast, so I can get big baller money so I can afford to play $50 blackjack. Because right now I'm barely able to afford $10 blackjack. So let's get this going here, folks. Come on. I do want to go in there. I've seen the pictures of the Encore Boston Harbor. It looks opulent. Looks very nice. And it's around the corner for me.
Looks like a beautiful place. I can almost see it out my window.
Yeah, I can see it from like...
Yeah.
Like, I'm the other side. Like, I could see through it towards you. We come at it from different angles. But literally, it's like a 20-minute walk if I wanted to walk there. That's pretty close.
Yeah, I think it might be... It's either going to be the best or the worst thing that ever happened to me.
I'm going to say it's probably the latter. But you never know. Could catch a heater. Could be a big summer for Jay King.
I'm an elite poker player. Don't... To the listener gods, you don't want to see me at your poker table. You don't. If I sit down, you should probably stand your ass up and go somewhere else where someone's not going to just take every chip in front of you.
Wow. Big talk.
Yeah.
Interesting.
How shall I say, stick it in you.
Now that I want to hear. That I want to see. That I want to see. So, maybe someday.
Check.
Let me ask you this. You
should say, have paid me off.
How elite do you think you are? Are you like world poker tour? Like, am I going to see you on ESPN?
I'm in the 100th percentile.
What's your opinion on guys wearing sunglasses at the poker table?
I mean, are you supposed to have an opinion about that? I think it's fine.
I think it's stupid. I think it's why sunglasses, like the whole point of being able to read somebody, like you're supposed to be able to look in their eyes. It's like cheating to me. You know, if you're that like
no, you just
sunglasses.
That's
just,
you're just an amateur, John.
Now, get out of here. Sunglasses at a poker table is bush league. I've always hated it from day one. And no, I'm not good at poker at all. So I'm not going to pretend like I'm good at poker.
Just an amateur. Just an amateur.
But I think sunglasses at the table is just bush league. Come on.
What bugs me is the headphones in the ears, and then they don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that.
I want to smack those dudes.
I don't know about those dudes. I've never encountered those dudes, but that would also be. Yeah, I wouldn't like that. Look, to me, you sit at the poker table. Let's all look at each other in the eye and play poker. I don't want sunglasses. Like, that's you're hiding something. You're trying to like it's stupid. I think you're trying to get some sort of cheap competitive advantage because you can't like control your eyes. Come on. All right, we've hit the end.
John, that was the poker rant of the day.
Thank you. I got to have a rant somehow. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember.
Oh, no doubt.
Give us the subscriptions. Tell your friends. I need that money. I need that $10, $15, $20 blackjack table money. Go out there. I'm going out to Vegas.
Pay that man money.
That's right, JKGB. All right, that's the show. Subscribe where you can subscribe. Rate us where you can rate. Give us a good review. And tell everybody to listen to Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.